Welcome to the Husband Material Podcast, where we help Christian men quit pornography. So you can change your brain, heal your heart, and save your relationship. My name is Drew Boa, and I'm here to show you how. Let's go. Hey guys, welcome to the show. Today I have with me Nick Stumbo, the Executive Director of Pure Desire Ministries, the author of Setting Us Free and Safe. Nick, welcome to Husband Material.
Hey, thanks, Drew. It's great to be a part of this with you. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've had some good conversations so far on the Pure Desire podcast.
That's right.
I'm really excited to introduce my audience to you and to some of your story. You specifically come from a background of being a pastor's son and becoming a pastor yourself. How did God lead you to where you are now?
Yeah, that could be a rather lengthy story. I mean, do you want the 30-second elevator version, the 5-minute walk version?
Let's go for a little walk for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So I grew up in a Christian home in a rural town in Wyoming. Very godly home, good parents. You know, it's not the story where people had, you know, a dad who was a pastor and who was one way at church and was just a tyrant at home. I mean, he was good dad, loving family, but there were definitely things about just standards of behavior and what we did and didn't talk about in the home that very early in life created these caveats of just particularly in sexuality where I didn't know how to talk about it. I inherently knew it that it felt wrong or shameful or secretive. And so when things started happening, like, you know, being exposed to something on TV at a friend's house, having another friend that, you know, wanted to, you watch me do something and then I watch you do it. The kind of, I think, curiosity, sexual stuff kids get into that's very common. I had no idea what to do with it, how to process it, how to talk to anyone about it. And so you kind of shove it away and play the part of the good kid and the good family and go to church. And around my teenage years, I felt called into ministry and was going to do the most heroic thing you could do for Jesus was go be a missionary. And so that's what I was pursuing, but then felt God's call to not go abroad. And so the next most heroic thing you can do is go be a church planter. And so that was my call and my sense of I was going to plant the next great church. And all along the way, as I'm preparing for these things, I mean, I'm going to Bible college, got great godly friends around me, Christian mentors, other pastors in my family that were speaking into my life. Now, there's all these support structures in place. And yet underneath it, there was this periodic binge purge cycle of pornography that I would often just explain away as, well, it's what guys struggle with. As I grow up, I'll just grow out of it. It's not something I do that often. And, you know, I would typically compare myself to others and say, well, I'm not doing what I hear about other people doing. It's at this low level. And so I'll figure it out. And so I met my wife in Bible college. We got married, moved out to Washington State, where I became an associate pastor. And the plan was to plant a church. And then couple years into that, the senior pastor felt called to go overseas to Hong Kong, and the elders asked me to step in as the senior pastor. And so at the ripe age of 26, I became a lead pastor of a church of about 250. Over the next couple of years, I skillfully grew that church right down to 175, and was kind of really at a point of like, man, I don't know if I can do this. And what happened in becoming a lead pastor, I think, were my own expectations of now I need to be the guy. You know, because I could feel I'm young, people maybe don't think I can do it. And so I need to prove that, like, I'm the most spiritual person in the room. And so at that point, for sure, anything sexual that was going on in my life, because that binge purge cycle of pornography was still happening, sometimes monthly, sometimes I'd have a good stretch and it'd be a couple of months, sometimes it was several times a month. But there was no safe place to go and confess or get help, because I felt like that would be admitting that I wasn't the most spiritual person in the room, that I shouldn't be the pastor, and I would lose my career, which was really the only thing up to that point I had been trained to do. So it's very frightening to think about, if I expose this and lose my job, I'm not trained to do anything else except, you know, a minimum wage job somewhere. So I just did what I think many people in professional ministry do, is I hide it. I figure out how to do it on my own. I make promises to God and myself that it's going to be better. And because I'd had an openness to share with my wife, even before we'd gotten married, I'd been honest with her about the struggle in my life. And, you know, I promised her it wasn't about her or her beauty, that I was something I was working on and that God was helping me with. And, you know, I could talk a good talk. And so she would believe, like, oh, okay, you know, it's going to get better and I'll support you. And well, we got to a point 10 years into our marriage where as now as the lead pastor, she's the only safe person I could confess to. So every few months or a couple times a year, I'm coming to her and in, you know, shame and remorse, like I messed up again and I'm so sorry. And here's why this time was different. And here's why this time will be the last time. But after 10 years of that, my wife had really, she'd had enough. Her confidence that it would ever be the last time was gone. Her faith that it could change was gone. And she was kind of facing that decision of like, this is going to be my life. And can I spend the rest of my life continually going through this cycle of pain? And I could see that something in her was breaking or shifting, just how she looked at me, how she talked to me. And I realized we were at a very dangerous point in terms of our marriage. And obviously, if you know, if the marriage falls apart, your job as a pastor falls apart. It just like that was everything hanging in the balance. And so it was really by God's sovereignty that right around that same time, we were introduced to Pure Desire Ministries. I was actually at a conference for pastors where Ted Roberts was one of the speakers. And at the end of his message, our district leadership got up and said, if you're a pastor who struggles with pornography and it doesn't involve anything illegal or anything with other people, then we have a pathway for you to get free, to keep your job, and we're going to help and even pay for a lot of it. And so it was just this ready-made offer for us. Yet what's really humbling for me looking back is even in that season of life where I knew my marriage was on the line, my ministry was on the line, and there's this perfect opportunity, when I heard about it, my initial reaction was not to say, yes, that's for me. My initial reaction was to look around the room at all these other pastors and think, boy, I hope the men who are really struggling are listening to this because this sounds like a great opportunity for them. And I think it just underscores the danger of our sexual brokenness is that whatever we're dealing with, we've usually found a way to rationalize or justify it so that what we're dealing with isn't that bad, but what others deal with, well, they need help. And so I needed the help. I just wasn't self-aware enough to know it. And yet by God's grace at that conference, as I'm hearing this opportunity, my wife was with me. And, you know, she only came to about one out of every three pastors' conferences I could go to. We had small kids. She was a teacher. But she happened to be at this conference, and she heard that same offer. And I looked over at her, and her eyes are, you know, wide open and brimming with tears, and she's filled with hope. And I'm realizing, oh, I think I'm going to get to go meet Ted Roberts and hear about Pure Desire because my wife's going to make sure of it. And so I say that really to encourage people that I drug my feet into the recovery and healing process the whole way. In fact, I would have honestly said at that time, I'm just doing this to make my wife happy and to save my marriage. I did not really think I needed that much help. But we got into the counseling process with Pure Desire. We got into groups for men who struggled, for wives who were feeling betrayed. And that year's journey for us was, I mean, nothing short of miraculous. I tell people all the time, I think of it as a miracle, even though it took a year. God could have healed us in a moment, but there's no way we would have learned and grown and changed and processed the way we did in that year that led to really a transformation of our marriage and my behaviors and my thinking and seeing all the ways that pornography wasn't really the problem, but it was the symptom of the deeper stuff that I didn't know how to deal with. And so God just used it to transform us in so many ways. And at the end of that year, we took our story and shared it with our church. During a Sunday morning sermon on Romans 8 and processing, you know, why does Paul say, I do what I don't want to do? And I said, that's me. You know, for 15 years, I've had an addiction to pornography. And, you know, you could have heard a pin drop when the pastor stands up and says, I was addicted to pornography. But then I shared about the process we'd been through, about God's grace. And I offered an opportunity to say, I want to help other people that are struggling because I know I'm not the only one. And we watched over the next 5-6 years as that ministry of groups for men and women walking through purity, reestablishing their marriages, really became the most significant discipleship tool in our church that we'd ever had. I mean, it was healing marriages. It was helping people come to Christ. It was taking a lot of men that were very much on the fringes of our church and getting them healthy and healed. And they would start to move into the core of church leadership. And it was just like, man, this is what's, my conclusion was, this is what's been holding a lot of people back, is either the brokenness in their marriage, the shame in their lives, or for wives, the sense of betrayal and who can I trust? And when we started helping people really at that deep level, soul level of their shame and their sexual brokenness, it was transformational. And so because of that, wrote our book, Setting Us Free, started speaking some with Pure Desire. And in 2015, some of the listeners might know that Dr. Ted Roberts was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And so there was a real need for Pure Desire to transition leadership. And that's where they called and asked if we'd consider it. And we, at that time, just felt like this was God's next step for us. So we left the traditional church ministry, but feel just as much involved in ministry as ever before. Just the context has changed. And so have been here now almost 4 years and really trying to do the same thing, trying to find ways to take my story and what God did in our lives and the principles we learned and help other people see it. Because I think that's the beauty of what a lot of us are working on. You know, you, Drew, and at Pure Desire and many others, is we've understood some foundational principles about why we do what we don't want to do. And if we can help people in safe, caring community go through that process, we know that freedom is an incredibly likely possibility. And so just watching other people take that journey is what fires me up. Seeing people that are at some of those early stages I was at and trying to say to them, yeah, I know you're just doing this for your wife, but hang in there. I think you're going to see why you really do need this. And it's exciting to me to watch that journey. So glad to be a part of Pure Desire and hoping that my story in some way could maybe open a door for other people, just the way that Ted Roberts did for us 10 years ago.
It's so beautiful to see the redemption, because in so many ways, pastors are not allowed to struggle sexually.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Leaders are not allowed to struggle sexually, and as a result, not allowed to heal either. When you have someone coming to you who is in a prominent leadership ministry position, they're exactly where you were so many years ago, how do you help them take the next step?
You know, I think for a lot of people, it's about taking off some of those titles and accomplishments and, you know, the roles we have that we do rely on to feel like we're of significance and value. And it's the ways we feel called to contribute and serve. But underneath a lot of that, we're just men and women that struggle with brokenness. And what I try to remind people of is that there's no guarantees of sexual maturity if no one discipled us or trained us. And that's what I find is so common among Christian leaders, is there was an assumption of health when it came to our sexuality. So we went to Bible college and seminary and went through licensing and ordination processes. And in, at least in my experience, in the vast majority of people I talk to, there's maybe a few questions asked about personal integrity. But if you've learned how to skillfully answer those questions, you can usually get around them and not really have anyone pay too much attention, because we put all this focus on your training and your preaching and your Bible and theology. And those things are important. But we just assume that people are healthy in their sexuality, but no one has really helped them understand how to be healthy. And so I think for someone who's really looking to take that first step, it's just to come to that place of a healthy acceptance of, I'm a human being who has brokenness, and that doesn't make me unique or perverted or weird or some kind of reject. It makes me human. And to help them see that the process they're going to go through is something that every single human being would benefit from. Now, not every human has necessarily a deep struggle with sexual brokenness, but when we start to look at, like, what's driving my identity, what do I turn to cope with pain and strong emotions in life, like, those are things common to humanity. And if a pastor or leader can see, I'm just needing to do some personal maturing here and address some things no one has helped me address, it can help them take off some of the shame and the secrecy and the labels that they feared, and just enter into a process of health that really can be life-changing. So I don't know if I exactly answered your question. The first step, real practically speaking, is I try to tell them, you're going to need a group. You're going to need to sit with other people and be real and not be, you know, pastor so-and-so or leader so-and-so. You're going to just need to be Jim or Bill or Henry and say, this is my life and here's what I'm dealing with, and let other people look you in the eye and go, man, thanks for being here. We're so glad you're here. Welcome to the club. You're just like us. Yeah. And that's really the healing environment in my mind.
It's almost like welcome to humanity.
Yeah.
You don't get to be the superhuman one. You don't get to be the especially Christ-like model citizen.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, for me, a quick story. I think group was so transformational because Ted Roberts required me to go to a group. I tried to talk him out of it. You know, I tried to say, no, let's just do counseling. I'll read all the books. I'll do all the work, but I don't have time for a group. And he's like, well, if you don't go to a group, this probably won't work. And I'm like, dang it. So I got to go to group. And at that time, the closest one was about half an hour away. And he told me, you don't have to tell them you're a pastor, which looking back, I don't even know why he said that. Cause there's no way I could have gotten through a group and not eventually shared how all this connected in my life. But I went up to this group and, you know, I don't know what I expected, if it was going to be guys in long trench coats and dark sunglasses and, you know, it's like a sex addicts club. Like I didn't know what was going to be there, but it was just these normal guys that were sharing their story and being open. And, you know, it didn't take long and it drew me in. I was sharing things I'd never shared before. And what I really started to recognize is these guys had never, ever known me as Pastor Nick. They had never seen me preach, lead, you know, do anything of significance other than show up at a group and share all of my worst stuff. And when I found love, acceptance, and value from them, having never performed or done anything good for them, I think for the first time I understood the love of God that isn't about performance and what we've achieved. That's just for who we are, because in that space, I was accepted for who I was at my very most brokenness. And I think that's what transformed me, is they didn't care if I was a pastor. They knew I was this guy named Nick that was trying to save his marriage. And so were they. And it healed me and it healed them. And it's an environment that I think without that, if we're always feeling like I've got to be the pastor or leader or perform, then whatever kind of help we get or whatever kind of love we get, we will always put through that grid of, well, it's because I performed well or because of the role I play. That's why they love me. And this voice inside will say, but if they really knew who you were, they wouldn't want you around. And until we're in an environment where people really know who we are and they still want us around, until then, I don't think we really can be transformed by love.
Amen. We all need that space. It doesn't have to be in a particular ministry. It could be in husband material. It could be in unwanted online groups. It could be in pure desire online groups. It could be in a group just for pastors. It could even be for some people in a group of people who aren't believers. And yet there's something within us that yearns to be known and loved and not just by somebody who's paid to help us.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about that quite a bit at Pure Desire, kind of the, and I think it is a bit of the current church model that if someone comes forward and says, boy, I'm struggling with pornography or some kind of sexual issue, we send you away or out of the building to a counselor who can specialize in that, who gives you professional help, hopefully fixes you up and sends you back better. Now, I know we don't say it that way, but I think inadvertently that's how it feels to people. My church doesn't know how to handle this. I need to go to an expert who does. And then I share with them all my bad stuff. Just like you said, someone who's paid to listen to me. And in some ways, it's like the evangelical version of the Catholic confession booth. I go to the priest whose job it is to hear my sin. I pour it all out. I feel terrible. They absolve me. They give me a little work to do. And then I leave feeling better. But I've never really had to risk with a peer. I've never really learned to be vulnerable with a friend or someone around me, because I've only done it in this one place with someone whose job it is. And I think long-term that doesn't create freedom and health. Now, we believe wholeheartedly in the power of counseling. We have a team of 12 counselors at Pure Desire, and we think they can be life-changing, but it's in conjunction with that hard work of being with peers and looking people in the eye that they don't owe you anything. You're not paying them, but they're in their own journey too. That is a huge part of that transformation. So there is a place for professionals. There's a place for coaches like Drew Boa and many others that can help someone at a very deep level process. Okay, what's going on here? Let's get into your story. But if that's all we do, I think we still run into that fear. But if the normal person knew who I am, then they wouldn't love me.
Yeah, so good. I've heard it said that we really need three types of people to succeed in recovery. And those are allies, guides, and experts. And the experts would be like the Ted Roberts, the Patrick Carnes out there who have done the research, who have written the books. And the guides are people who are ahead of us on the journey and leading us in a relational capacity, like a counselor, a coach, a therapist. But then we also need those allies, those people who are in it with us, side by side. They have our backs. We can call them at 2 a.m. and we feel like we're in it together. And really, we need all three.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, for you who are listening and watching, do you have all three? Which one is most needed for you right now? And for so many of us, the hardest one to find is an ally. You can buy the books by the experts. You can pay for a counselor or coach. It's tricky though to find somebody who is with you just because they want to be.
Yeah. Well, it's also the greatest risk, right? It's like what we've been talking about, that when there's nothing that's requiring you to stay with me and I'm going to start opening up about stuff, that fear sets in of don't share this, don't ruin the relationship. But again, and that's why we talk about the value of group, where people have willingly committed not only to the group, but to one another, because they know, well, I'm not just here for Drew. I'm here for me. I'm here for my healing. And so I'm going to do my work. But there's something about when I'm committed to that for myself and you're doing the same as well, it bonds us together because we're sharing that experience of we're risking together. So we're not just risking alone. And I think that's what a lot of people in the church maybe face, is feeling like they hear a great sermon on purity and it's like, so go out and tell a friend what you're struggling with. It's like that fear, like, well, what if my friend has no clue what I'm talking about? What if this isn't their battle? And there's beautiful stories of times one friend opens up to another and the other friend says, yeah, me too. And that's awesome. But that fear of what if they can't relate to me? So in a group where you know that's why we're here, it really creates some freedom of, man, no holds barred. Let's be real. We're not going to pretend. We're going to just get into it. And there's just an incredible gift in that kind of a meeting or being with an ally like that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the practical options people can take to join a group with structure, with commitment, and especially for ministry leaders and pastors, how can they get plugged in?
Yeah, really there's three options that we talk about through Pure Desire Ministries. And I want to echo what you said, Drew, that Pure Desire, we're not the only, game on the block, that there's a lot of people doing great work and we want to embrace that as well. And so the ministry banner that you choose to work under, to me, is less important than that you do follow some of these principles of working with someone that isn't just going to tell you to try harder, read your Bible more, pray more, quote more verses, but that is going to help you get below the surface to ask, why do I do what I don't want to do? What's driving my behavior? What are the emotions? What are the experiences from my past that have created negative messages that I listen to? And why do I listen to them? And what are the excuses that I buy into? And so that deeper work is being done in a lot of places. So at Pure Desire, we have online groups. In fact, we have online groups just for pastors that are made up of about 6 or 7 pastors going through this process together, being led by someone with pastoral experience. That is something that does cost some money because we pay the leader to bring their time and their expertise, but it's a really powerful environment. The second opportunity is many local churches have a group. So we have a group finder map on our website at puredesire.org where, like I did, people could find a group near them, drive to it, get engaged and find their healing. And in some ways, it's actually better to not, if you're the pastor or leader, going to one in your own church might have a high risk factor. And particularly depending on the kind of environment you're in, it may be better for you to find a group outside of your own church for you to get some healing and then maybe come back to help those groups. So second option would be to join an in-person group. And third, we can empower you to begin a group yourself. That's what I loved when I first learned about Pure Desire, is it's really not based on a counselor or an expert to come and teach a class. The group material itself walks you through the process. And if you had 3-4 people that wanted to do this with you, all you do is say, well, let's turn to page one. Let's read the introduction. Let's talk about it. Okay, here's our assignment for next. And you're letting the workbook be the expert and you're just walking through. So I think for many pastors, they may have a few people they have confided in, that somewhere it's come up and maybe a friend or colleague has said, man, that's my struggle too. I'll pray for you. Maybe just reaching out to them and saying, hey, I've got some great workbooks. Would you want to walk through it together with me? And they could even do it like this on a Zoom or a Skype call every week, meet for going through a lesson, and that's another option. So I think any three of those could help create that environment. But to me, it is important that there is a structure you're following, because I think that's another trap that we fall into in the church world, is what we would call, male accountability groups. Well, that Saturday mornings, this guy's group gets together and they kind of go around and say, well, did you mess up this week? And the one guy says no, and the next guy no, and the third guy, well, yeah, I relapsed and looked at some porn, and I was like, man, we'll pray for you. And they pray and they love on them. They're like, okay, try not to this week. And then they all go out and, they come back in another week. Did you mess up this week? And really there's no structure or a plan they're following. It's just learning to be honest, which is a part of the process. But I find for very, very few people is accountability alone what we actually need. We need to learn what's going on and why and where is it coming from. And that's where having a workbook, having some structure like what Pure Desire and other groups have is so valuable, because it takes that accountability and makes it more practical. It puts it into action so that there's actual change taking place and not just another week of, okay, I'm going to try harder to tell the guys I had a good week. Because that's, for most people, that's not working.
Yeah. And I have experienced that.
Me too. Hear, hear.
Yeah. Those groups either become really stressful because we just try harder and harder, or they stagnate because we realize it's not working and it fizzles out.
Or yeah, we're all showing up going, yeah, I had a rough week. Yeah, me too. Yeah. And it's so safe to be honest that there's no truth of like, we're going to change this and here's how.
Yeah.
Because we've just become comfortable kind of in admitting our weaknesses.
So Pure Desire runs some excellent groups with Seven Pillars workbook, which is going to be most helpful for Christian men finding freedom from pornography. Also with Jay Stringer's ministry, Unwanted, we're starting some online groups going through his book, which is very focused on your story. One of the things I like about Pure Desire is the way that you help people gain momentum in between group sessions with the faster scale, with commitment to change, with the homework, and also the calls that you're required to make to your allies, so that it becomes more of a lifestyle, not just I'm going to class once a week.
Yeah, we try to emphasize to people, we're not here to stop a behavior. We're here to change the way we do life. Mm-hmm. Because if you only try to stop a behavior, even if we're successful at stopping the behavior, we'll often find that that unhealth comes out somewhere else. You know, we turn to a different coping mechanism. We start to eat more, or we become this exercising fanatic that's just every day sweating out our problem, but we haven't really faced what's going on inside. And so we want to take it deeper into that process. And I tell people what happens outside of group is as important as what happens inside a group, because we're trying to implement it as a part of our routine, as a part of our thinking and how we do life. And so the more we engage with the homework and phone calls and those tools personally, then the group, and in some ways I think of this as of how church should be, that Sunday morning experience of worshiping, if that's all someone ever does, their experience of faith is going to be rather thin, because it's like, well, I've got this 1 hour that's great, and then I go the rest of my week and try to live however I can. It's the day in, day out stuff that really starts to set in and become part of our character. So yeah, those tools really are a part of the make or break experience, that when someone engages with it, it makes the group experience that much more powerful.
Absolutely. So if you're isolated, if you don't have structure, if you realize the need for real relationships where you can be a human and not just a performer, Pure Desire groups, Unwanted groups, I'm putting the links to these in the show notes so that you can go find out when they're starting, apply, and get into the mess.
For sure. So,
awesome. So Nick, if I am someone who's dragging my feet into recovery with all kinds of excuses about how I don't need help, or I'm not in a position to get healed because people are looking up to me, people are depending on me, or if going to group sounds like the most loathsome, repulsive idea I've ever heard, how can you help me get motivated to jump in and join?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is really looking at the vision of what we want our life to be. And being willing to be honest with ourselves about where I'm at, that am I carrying around a sense of secrecy, a sense of shame, even with the people that I would claim know me best, do they really know everything about you? Because if you're living with a spouse, with friends that they really don't know your stuff, then you are constantly in that place of kind of image management, holding back secrets, not really revealing who you are. And we maybe don't realize how burdensome and stressful that is. And in having had my own experience and hearing now, you know, from thousands of people who walked this journey and at some point felt the same way of, I don't need that and let's just ignore it. They get to kind of the, what I would call the other side. And I don't want to make it sound like, well, you just arrive at a place and then you're done. Cause it's really to me more of a journey that we're all on continually. But when you start to get to a place of health and the shame is gone and the lies are being dealt with and you've exposed those core messages from your past and the power they had over you, that the way that feels like, and people talk about, it's like I woke up. It's like I came out of a fog. It's like I started really living. if there's any way I could say to that person, it's like, you maybe don't know what you're missing, the kind of life you could have. And if you can get even a glimpse of that, like say, what if I was living a whole day with no secrets and not a single ounce of fear that someone might learn something about me? What would that feel like? It's like, man, that'd be good. And I remember thinking of that too. And I would share people about my experience, because when I say, you know, we spent a year in counseling and groups, for a lot of people, it's like, a year? Like, can't we do this in 3-4 weeks or just get this done? Like, what could possibly take so long? And I tell people this, I say, you know, I invested 5 years to go to seminary, and I did it via extension. So I, you know, it took a little longer than the normal seminary experience, but in our society, we have this view of, well, you're being trained for something significant. It's worth that time and investment. But I look at the year I spent in the intense healing journey and say, by far, the life change and the value that came out of it far, far exceeded the 5 years in seminary. And seminary was really good. I feel like I learned a ton. But in comparison, the life change and transformation, not even close. And that's my encouragement to people. Like, if it took you a year of your life, but your marriage was better, your self-worth was different, where you found your value, your relationship with God, your sense of the Holy Spirit being with you, if all of those things had taken a huge step forward, would it be worth it? And I find almost universally people would say, well, yeah, if that could happen, mm-hmm. it would be worth it. But a lot of people maybe have gotten into a place where they think, I don't know if it's possible. I think this is just, it is what it is. You got to do your best. And this is kind of the way it's going to be. And we're here to say to that person, no, it's not just how it is. And you don't have to just live this way. You don't have to be in that constant battle and struggle and the binge purge and good couple of months and then there I'm back. Like, it doesn't have to be. And so if there is a better life for you that God is calling you into, why not go for it? I mean, that's the other perspective I have, is like, if it's a year later, what have you lost? Like, maybe you lost a little time and money, but if you're still the same person, well, at least you tried. But I, again, would tell you from my experience and so many others, if you engaged in this for a year, whether it's with Drew or Pure Desire or all these many different processes, I think you look back and go, wow, that was worth every minute, every penny, and I'm so glad I engaged because of what God has done in my life through that process.
There you have it. That's it. A new life. And this is 1 year. Hopefully you got decades to come. And those decades will be so different as a result of just 1 year. 1 year sounds short to me, considering the 2 to 5 year expectation for how long the healing process takes. 1 year is still fast. Nick, what among all of the benefits, what is your favorite part about freedom from porn?
Boy, that's like asking what's your favorite food. I mean, so many things. Like, where do I start? There's different aspects, different dynamics. I think it's knowing, I would put it this way, it's having a confidence and a certainty about my future. Because that was one of the things when I was struggling with pornography, the cloud that would hang over me, the enemy able to say, like, this is all going to fall apart. You're going to crash and burn. Your wife's going to find out and leave you. Your church is going to catch you and fire you. Like, that cloud that just hung over me, that even in the good moments was like this, but what about this? It's all going to go away. Living with that sucks, if I can say it that way. It's a horrible place to be when you look back at, why did I live that way? And that doesn't, I'm not trying to say, boy, I'm just this perfect human being now and I have no struggles. Like, that's the other thing. I want to be honest with people and say, we're still human beings. I'm still susceptible and I've got to have guardrails and I've got to have health and I need community. But when I look at my future, it's like, man, I'm going to have a great marriage. God's going to use me. I'm going to be a good dad. And I know I can still grow in all those things. I mean, I got tons of areas I can improve in, but that confidence of God's at work and the future is going to be better than the past, that's just like a whole new way of looking at life. So I would say that's how I would summarize it.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for joining us today. You can get Nick's book, Setting Us Free, and also his book, Safe, about creating culture of grace in the church at puredesire.org, right?
That's right. It's a good place to find it. Setting Us Free is also on Amazon. We've got some eBooks now, so we got a few more options than we had in the past.
Cool.
But puredesire.org is kind of a great one stop for all the good resources we can provide for people.
Yes, and including information about groups. All those links will be in the show notes. Thanks again, Nick.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Drew. Really appreciate being here.
And everyone else out there, always remember, you are God's beloved son, and you, he is well pleased.